I'm Jess Benlove, a performance dietitian, coach, and speaker, and welcome to Stay at the Top, the podcast for ambitious high performers wanting to easily go from exhausted to energized with evidence-based hacks designed to deliver sustained success and enhanced longevity. I want you to harness the power of nutrition, sleep, mindset, and other high-performing behaviors to achieve your big goals now, while also considering future you as well. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome to another episode of Stay at the Top. Today, I am joined by Dr. Gina Cleo, who is one of the world's leading experts in habits and is passionate about translating scientific evidence into simple, actionable strategies to improve health, wellness, mindset, and lifestyle-related habits for good. Gina has a PhD in habit change, is an adjunct professor at Bond University, and is also an accredited dietitian. Gina has also recently released her first book, The Habit Revolution, which is an absolute must for all of you. In today's conversation, we dive deep on what is a habit, why do we form habits, how is a habit triggered, what is the process of forming a habit? How do we break old habits? We bust some myths around how long it actually takes to form a habit and how many habits you can form at the one time. It's packed full of tactical, practical, actionable, evidence-based, scientific strategies that you can walk away and implement with ease. I can't wait for you to listen to today's episode. Gina, welcome to Stay at the Top.
Ah, so good, Jess. So good to be here. Thanks for that intro.
You know, we've known each other for a few years now, first connecting on the previous podcast and then spending quite a bit of time together at PwC's The Outside. And, you know, your superpower, I believe, is science and expertise blended with just good vibes, positivity, real world application. And, you know, for me, that's what Stay at the Top is about. It's about sustained success, enhanced longevity, but how do we actually put it into practice to get results now and also consider future us as well?
Oh, thanks, Jess. That means so much. And I've been very intentional about being practical with my work because I've been to so many like medical conferences around the world where, you know, they present all this awesome research and the latest science. And I've walked away going, okay, that's amazing, but what do I do with it? And it was so frustrating. So I remember a few years ago just setting this mission to myself that every time someone read something that I've written or heard something I've said, I want it to be applicable and like have meaningful change in someone's life.
I love that. And, you know, you're definitely doing that. And the book I know is the next step for you to really get that message out there. But before we get into, I guess, the book and habits and what is a habit and all of that goodness, what sparked your interest in diving deep in this topic?
You know, I stumbled into the habit space. Like you said, I was a dietitian and I was able to help people only short term, I personally found in the work that I was doing. And I found that people were just coming back wanting to work on the same things they'd already worked on before. And I started calling them frequent flyers. And I just thought I was a terrible dietitian. But then when I looked at the research around sustainable change, I found that it wasn't just me. You know, 97% of our New Year's resolutions are forgotten by the end of January. Most our goals are not achieved, at least not maintained, if we want to maintain them long term. I also was struggling with my own, I guess, disordered eating, you could say, or just like unhealthy patterns that I found I couldn't just talk my way out of changing. It's like I would say to myself, I'm not going to do that. And then I would do the exact same thing I just told myself I wouldn't do. So I was frustrated with myself as well. So I had questions that I wanted answered. I had frustrations that I wanted to fix or find solutions for, which is what led me to doing a bit of research initially in this, like neuroscience, psychology, understanding what motivates us to do what we do. And then, you know, fell into my PhD into all things habit change.
Amazing. And, you know, that is exactly the work that health professionals do. At the crux, it's behavior change. And I find definitely and resonate with what you've just said. It's not always the disconnect in the knowing, it's in the doing, and not only in the doing, but then rinse and repeating that. And ultimately embedding something that then becomes autopilot. It's not something you force, it's something that you just do.
Yeah.
And I guess with that, in terms of if we were to actually, I guess, start at the start and define what is a habit, how can we summarize that really succinctly?
We often use the words habits, behaviors, routines, rituals interchangeably, but they're actually all very different things. A habit is a triggered behavior or action that has become, it's part of your memory and it's a learned behavior. So your brain's associated some sort of trigger in your external or internal environment with a behavior. And so every time you encounter this trigger, your brain's like, oh, I know what happens next. And it automatically does the behavior, which is the habit. So habits are essentially automatic behaviors that we do subconsciously, mindlessly, and they're there because we've repeated them consistently over time. And our brain has moved them from our prefrontal cortex, which is that logical thinking brain, into back into the sort of the midbrain, which is where our, this word is such a weird word, it's a basal ganglia. That's where our habits sit. And it's essentially the autopilot system of our brain.
Amazing. And the key word you just used there is that autopilot. And I know that is something, and not a lot of people, I don't think that they're aiming for that. I think when people are kickstarting a goal or a New Year's resolution, and they're not necessarily thinking about how can I create something which becomes what I do and I just put it on autopilot. I don't think they think that way.
It's so true. And I find that when I had that mental switch of thinking, I don't want to keep using motivation or willpower, I don't want to use self-control because it's fleeting, it's up and down, it's unreliable. I want to just be one of those people that just gets up and works out or has a good breakfast and not have to grind through it. When I had that mental shift, that's when everything changed in terms of what goals I set, how I set them, how I went about trying to achieve them. And honestly, like, I think the greatest gift I could give someone is the freedom of living a life filled with healthy habits, because it's easy, it's seamless. It becomes not just your lifestyle, but it becomes your identity. And I think there's a real, the word I keep coming to with it is freedom. And it's really nice to not have to, you know, use up all your cognitive resources to do things that just you want to put on autopilot.
100%. And, you know, I know in your book you talk about there are five main factors or five key triggers that help us form a habit. Maybe that's whether it's a good or a bad, which we'll dive into. But can you take us through what they are?
Yeah. So every single habit we have is triggered by something. So that's going to the five habit triggers, they're either internal or external. They are time, location, what you've just done beforehand, so that preceding action or event, how you're feeling emotionally, and the people that you're around. So time is probably one of the most common habit triggers. So it could be like 7 a.m., I go for a walk, or 12 p.m. or midday, I have lunch. And we'll notice these patterns happen when, for example, it's midday and you're eating lunch, even though you're not necessarily hungry. The other one is location. So location could be when I'm sitting on my couch, I want to have a snack, or when I get into bed at night, I want to scroll on my phone. So that's going to be your location triggers. The next one is preceding event or action. So when we think of our habits, we often think of them as just isolated things that we do, like we exercise or we drink a glass of wine at the end of the day, or we check our emails first thing in the morning. But actually, our habits form in a web, and one habit feeds off another, and it creates sort of a cascade of habits, which is essentially becomes our routine. So preceding event is what you've just done beforehand will trigger the next thing that you do. So take like making, I don't know, a cup of some coffee. Say you're making a coffee. The sequence in which you make a coffee is very habitual, and every single one of those steps is triggering the next step. So turning on the coffee machine might trigger you to grab a mug. Grabbing a mug might trigger you to, you know, do the next thing. And there's a flow-on effect. there's also bigger, like if you took a step back, it could also be, you know, when I have my breakfast, I will feed my dog. So it could be a preceding event that way. The fourth habit trigger is your emotional state. So how you're feeling emotionally. It could be like emotional eating, for example. It could also be when I feel lonely, I scroll on my phone, or when I feel sad, I eat a tub of ice cream. So those are our emotions. Could also be happy emotions. And then finally, your social situation. The people that you're around form part of your environment. Sometimes we will do things around certain people that we wouldn't do around others, whether it's drinking more, smoking, swearing, you know, staying at work later, or whatever it is. Our social environment essentially dictates the social acceptability and the culture that we're in. And that can trigger parts of our habits as well.
That's really interesting. And I mean, out of curiosity, is any one of those more influential in general, or is it just really circumstantial, really individualized to the person? And it's just understanding that there are those five, I guess, main buckets of triggers for people.
Yeah, it's very individualized. Having said that as well, you know, it's going to have the most impact on your life the more you encounter it. So although social situation may be something that triggers significant habits for you or big habits for you, you might not encounter it as often as the time of day, which happens every day consistently, or, you know, the place you're in, say it's your bedroom or your kitchen or your front door, that's going to happen every day of the week. So that's going to have a bigger impact on your life than the social situation.
And I guess if we come into wanting to form a new habit, I know in the book you reference it. I love a framework. I love a protocol. I love a framework.
Yes.
Make it succinct, a few steps. And I know you've got a lot of great steps and frameworks in there, but one of them is around the habit formation framework. So yeah. Tell us about that.
So if you think of every habit that we're trying to create, break it down into three steps. And it's really nice to have this in mind because I think when we think of, you know, wanting to create a habit, we sort of want to wake up the next day and have the habit already embedded in our life. I mean, I certainly do.
Yesterday.
yesterday. Thank you very much. But when we understand there's a framework, we can place ourselves in where we're at in the framework and know that, you know, the next sequence is coming, and it's really just with consistency we'll get there. So the three, I guess, stages of the habit formation framework are initiation, training, and then maintenance. That initiation's when we're starting the habit. This is the most uncomfortable stage because our brain's like, oh, this is change. It takes energy and effort and time for me to do something different. I'm very comfortable in my routines. I'm already making like 35,000 decisions a day. I don't want to make more decisions to do things differently. So initiation is uncomfortable, and we've all felt it. It's that thing where we say that we're going to do a goal and we haven't done it before, or say you're playing a new instrument or learning a new language or a new skill. We're clumsy, it's clunky, it sounds terrible, it feels weird, and our body's not in the rhythm of it. That's initiation, because we are so comfortable in our routines. Even if our routines aren't serving us, they still give us that comfort of those rhythms that we have in our life. Initiation is all about, you know, planning when and where you're going to do your habit, actually taking action towards that habit. It's that first step of making change. Then we move into training. Training is all, it's sort of like the messy middle. It's the body of creating a habit. And that's the part where you're turning your habit into something that starts to be part of your lifestyle. It's more automatic. It's starting to feel natural. This is the part that is all about consistency, repetition. Keep on keeping on. This is the training part. And then finally, maintenance, the best part, is when your habit really starts to feel like second nature. It becomes part of your life and you're now using more your sort of your impulsive brain or that emotional basal ganglia rather than your reflective brain or your prefrontal cortex to get the habit done. So you don't even need to have a goal to do it anymore. Your brain's like, this is just what I do. It's a habit, like putting on your seatbelt in the car. That is the maintenance stage of the habit formation framework.
That is the goal. That is just what we want. Yes. Living our best life with ease. And that literally means I've got all of these habits that are serving me that I have implemented, but so many people, we want it yesterday. And also, you know, if we think of it as a traffic light system, it's people perceive these habit formations or whatever behavior they're trying to change as red or green. I'm not doing it, or I'm 100% doing it. And what you've just explained there is there are steps and there's a process. There's three steps. And I can imagine, depending on the significance of the habit change, maybe the number of micro steps involved, the time that it takes, which I know would come up a lot for you. And I've heard you busting myths on this.
Yes.
Talk to us about a realistic time frame of creating a new habit and breaking an old habit. And does that differ?
It definitely differs a lot. So a lot of people have heard that it takes 21 days to create a new habit. And this is a myth I love busting, because there is no evidence at all to show that it takes 21 days. The research is actually, it's from 21 days, and it can take up to a year or 10 months to create a new habit. It's a huge range. There's an average time of sort of roughly 10 weeks or 66 days. There's a very brand new research that's come out recently that actually showed that people who were asked to like wash their hands took about 2 weeks to develop that habit. And people who were asked to do something a bit more complex, which was getting to the gym, took anywhere between 4 to 7 months to create that habit. And when you think about it, it's exactly spot on what you said, Jess. There are more micro steps to getting to the gym. You need much more motivation. You need more time. You need more resources. You need so much more to get to the gym compared with washing your hands. So of course, it's going to take much longer to develop to that state of maintenance where it's automatic, it's natural, it's part of your life. The lesson here is really the simpler the habit that you're trying to create, the quicker it's going to be to develop. And we only really need to start the development of a habit. We don't have to make the whole thing habitual. I always say to people, you don't have to create an exercise habit. You just need to create a habit of getting to the gym, literally of putting on your activewear, getting in the car and getting to the gym. Once you're there, the rest is going to flow. You don't have to do the whole thing habitually. Now, how long it takes to break a habit, it's really hard to get the evidence around this because, again, so many factors contribute to it. The biggest factor is how much you want to break the habit. I've worked with people who have broken their habits overnight, like nail biting habits, for example, because they really wanted to break it. They were ready to break it. And it meant more to them to break the habit than the indulgence of maintaining that habit. And I've worked with other people who have taken weeks to break their habits because they were sort of ambivalent about it at the time. They were like, oh, like I want to, but I also really love doing this. So I'm just not sure. So the time it takes to break a habit is going to be up to you.
That's so interesting, Gina. And I think, you know, with all of this self-awareness and having a realistic approach and even just knowing if I'm forming a habit, give myself 10 weeks, you know, give myself a quarter, a season of the year. Like it's, we need to be patient. And if depending on the complexity, we need to break it down. And I know for a lot of my clients, when it is wanting to move more regularly, having those shoes or that, you know, the gym gear out in the morning is often that first micro step that they just need to do. And once they've done that, the rest kind of rolls on and there is that momentum.
Absolutely. And you know, there's actually research that shows that if we expect our habits to develop in 21 days and they don't, we end up throwing in the towel and giving up. But if we expect our habits to take that bit longer, then we're going to persevere because we know that with every repetition, the habit is getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and eventually it will feel like second nature. But we're not there yet, and we're not meant to be there yet. You know, the brain isn't like, you can't just switch a button, if only, and, you know, just make it happen. So I think, I love that you say that, you know, I think it's really important to be sober to the idea that it will likely take a few more weeks than that 21 days and just keep on keeping on with it.
And what about in terms of, you know, and this question probably comes from seeing so many people doing 75 hard on social media at the moment, which is quite an intensive, you know, personal development. For those unaware, it involves eating a certain way, moving a certain number of times a day, reading some pages of a personal development book and a few other things. But with that, it's if you miss a day, you start again.
And so you've got to do it 75 days in a row.
75 days in a row, yeah.
No rest days?
No rest days, yeah.
That's brutal.
I know. There's a lot we can, I think, unpack there in terms of what it's even asking of the body. But I guess the philosophy was that is trying to just set the standard, create it, don't miss a day, keep going. But in reality, that approach isn't going to work for a lot of people. And I think that approach can be disheartening if people think if I skip something, then I'm back to square one. Which, talk to us about the science or the research around that, or what a more realistic approach to creating a habit can be.
I feel like something like this works really well for people who are all or nothing, but that's also not an approach we're trying to encourage, because changing any sort of behavior is going to be a process of two steps forward, one step back. You know, I heard Brené Brown say once, and I sort of challenged it at the time, but she said, it's not a matter of if you fall, it's a matter of when you fall. And I was like, homegirl, you don't know me, like, I'm not going to do that. But no, she's right. And every single process of change means we're either going to forget our habit one day, we're going to have a crappy night's sleep, and we're going to, you know, fall back a little bit, or we're going to have a stressful period of work, or the kids are going to get sick. Like, life happens. And I think actually allowing that grace to go, okay, I can't do that today. Instead of my 30-minute walk, I can do a 5-minute walk, or I can just put my activewear on and walk around the house or clean a window or whatever it is. It's still moving. That process is, that self-compassion is actually where the greatest transformations happen. It's allowing ourselves the space to fall down, to not be rigid with our goals. And actually, a recent study that I was reading was showing that there's two groups of people. One group, they asked to do like this gym workout at a specific time of day for an X number of minutes a day. And then the other group, they encouraged them to go to the gym for the same number of times every week. But they were like, you can go anytime you want to. And, you know, you get to pick whatever days you go. And what they found is the people that were in that rigid group, that first group, stopped going to the gym once the study had finished, compared to the people that were more flexible in their plan. They continued to go because they were able to create this gym habit around their lifestyle. They were able to make it work. It didn't have to be at a specific time or, you know, a specific day. And there's such a huge lesson in that. And the habits that we're trying to create have to fit into our lifestyle, and they have to be sustainable. And I don't know, I just think taking breaks is also important. Mix things up and do things differently.
100%. The people that are on all the time trying to be a robot, it is going to result in crashing and burning sooner or later. And how you've just described, or what this study has shown, something I often talk about is, you know, find your non-negotiables, be consistent, but find a way to be consistent in the inconsistency, meaning life and days are never the same, particularly in 2024. Some people are in the office, some people are at home, some people travel for work. Like, there's just variables upon variables. So having a mindset and an approach which is, this is the box that I operate and live in, isn't going to serve for these outliers, or they're not even outliers, they're just life now. So that really sounds like that approach of, let's work on your non-negotiables, let's work out what's important, let's create that habit, but let's find a way to integrate it into our lives, which is actually what being a high performer is all about.
Yeah, completely. And look, if someone wants to do the 75-day challenge and you're not necessarily wanting to make those things habitual, like you're happy just to do the challenge, to push yourself, to do it with some mates, and you know that you may just fall off the wagon afterwards, do it. Like, that's fine. Just don't expect it to be your lifestyle at the end.
100%. And even, I haven't done a post on this yet because I feel it's a little bit controversial, because there's some people that, you know, they're passionate about it. But I often think, if social media wasn't a thing, would anyone even be subscribing to something as intensive as that?
Ooh, that's a juicy question. I think you should do that post. I love controversial.
All right. I might get the courage up and do that. Do it. We've talked a lot about forming a habit, which I love. I'm all about the positive and what we want to achieve. But let's spend some time talking about habits we may want to break, and some tips or some strategies that we can have, whether you have a framework for that. And similarly, is it a matter of one habit we're trying to change at a time, or can we look at a few? Do we have capacity to handle that?
Yeah, so our brain is capable of only making up to 3 changes at one time. So we don't want our goals or the things we want to create or break to look anything like our shopping list. It needs to be up to 3. And actually, if we just work on one thing at a time, we're much more likely to achieve it than if we do more. So just work on one habit that you want to break, really focus all your energy, your love, your attention on that. And once that starts to, you know, leave your life, then you can work on something else. It's going to be much more effective and much more enjoyable, because breaking habits, although it's totally possible, takes effort. It's not the most like pleasant time. And I think this is why habits, I think, is a sexy topic, but you know, there's not a lot of there's only 2 habit researchers in Australia. And it's because I think I can't promise you that you're going to change your life overnight or lose 10 kilograms in the first week like a lot of the fads do. But with breaking habits, there are 2 proven methods that we can do that. And I call them reprogramming or restructuring. So if you think of every habit has a habit loop, and that is the trigger that we talked about before, then there's the habit itself, and then there's some kind of reward that you get from your habit. It could be a hit of dopamine, it could just be comfort in the routine, doing something that's familiar. So every habit gives us a reward. With the reprogramming, it's all about replacing, not erasing. It's pointless saying, I'm just not going to do that anymore. It doesn't work. Our brains don't like it. We have this like rebellious teenager inside us who's like, oh yes, I am going to do that again. So we want to replace our unwanted habit with something else. It could be, when I get in bed, instead of scrolling on my phone, I'm going to pick up a book. Now, to do that, you don't want to have your phone sitting next to your bed and be like, that phone is dead to me, I'm not going to pick it up. Because it's there is a lot more dopamine.
You know it's there.
Yeah, you know it's there. There's a lot more dopamine you're going to get from your phone, from the colors, the sounds, the vibrations, the comments and likes, than you are from this black and white book. There's no match. So you want to put your phone where you can't reach it and have your book there. Now you're reflexively going to go and grab for your phone, and when it's not there, you've just got that book there. So that's about reprogramming a new habit in place of your old habit. The second method is restructuring. And this is all about restructuring our environment. So every habit starts with a trigger. If we remove the trigger, then the habit no longer takes place, because without triggers, we don't have habits. Restructuring is all about looking at the things that trigger our unwanted habits. And if we can eliminate them, eliminate them. So the story that I share in the book was, I think it was from a client that I called Sam, who had a habit of going through like the drive-through. And he would go through the drive-through every time, like every day on his way home from work, he'd go to this fast food chain. And he would say to himself, I'm going to see the golden arches and I'm going to just drive straight past. And it wouldn't happen. Like, he would just go straight in. So I asked him if he could just drive a different way home. And it only took him an extra minute or two to do that. And he did that. And he broke the habit instantly because he was no longer triggered by the golden arches. Now, it takes 30 days of abstinence from something that we feel addicted to for our brain to, I guess, reduce the amount of reward we get from it. So after 30 days, I was like, Sam, you can go back to driving the way that you were before. And, you know, you're not going to try to have 30 Big Macs like to make up for the time that you haven't been eating it. And that's exactly what happened. So restructuring is remove the trigger for whatever the habit is that you don't want to be doing anymore, if possible.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, I think with all of this, well, first of all, everybody go and buy the book or get the audio book. And, you know, I have it here in front of me. And,
yes,
you know, I just love that it's perfectly represents you and everything I said at the start. It's evidence-based, it's science-based, it's best practice, but they're relatively short chapters. Some are longer than others. It tells people what they need to know, but it gives great examples. There's some really great exercises and graphics in there. And at the end of each section, there's a summary, you know, and there's also
a good summary.
Often an activity. So it's an opportunity to read it, digest it, have some key takeaways and put it into practice. And it's not a scary, giant, like overly scientific book, which it blends, as I said, for me, it blends the balance of the science, the evidence. It does justice to like your work and your research, but it considers human beings and actually the most important thing is walking away and doing the thing and having a roadmap to do that.
Thanks, Jess. That means so much. All right, team, you better get your hands on The Habit Revolution. It really is. It's my life's work that I've put into it, and I've poured so much love and heart and vulnerability in the book. You know, I've shared my own stories in it, my own struggles, my triumphs, and then stories from, you know, hundreds of people that I've worked with over the years. And of course, distilling all the very complex neuroscience out there into that digestible, practical language so that we can apply it and truly, you know, really change our lives in a very meaningful way. So thanks, Jess. I appreciate it.
Hey team, just taking a short break from today's episode to let you know about an opportunity. Do you want your leaders or employees to have more energy, better focus, improved well-being, and enhanced performance in 2024? Well, the key lies in each person learning to master their daily non-negotiable behaviors like nutrition and sleep, and also learning to embed high-performing behaviors into their lives with ease. The good news is I offer a variety of workshops, sessions, and consultancy services drawing from a decade of experience working across multiple high-performance arenas. My approach, refined from supporting over 1,000 of the country's best athletes and special forces soldiers, combines cutting-edge nutrition, human performance, and well-being strategies that are simply unmatched. If you run a team or a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn or feel free to schedule a 15-minute discovery call to talk about your objectives using the link in the show notes. Now let's get back into the episode. Gina, I have a question I love to ask all of my guests, which is, what three things do you have in your life that help you to stay at the top?
Oh, don't make me pick three. I have so many. Oh my gosh. Okay. So first thing I'm going to say is regular movement. I'm a different person if I don't get to move my body every day. So I'm very much a big fan of having regular movement. The second one, I would say I'm really, really strict now with my bedtime routine. I sound so boring, but it has been a game changer for me. You know, it's like going to bed and waking up at the same time. And the reason for that is so much evidence shows that out of all the sleep hygiene things that we can do, that sleep routine is by far the most important. And if we sleep well, we have benefits for the rest of our life. And I would say the third thing is having really good balance. Like, and by balance, I mean, I make a decision to stop work because we work for ourselves, right? Like we can just keep going or we can not go at all. And so I think for me, it's time away from work that's very intentional, where I don't have my phone or emails or I'm not available. I'm offline and I'm not on social media. So that can be, you know, the time I'm at the dog park with Macy, my dog, and then dinner time with my husband or the weekends, like I make sure to get in nature. So there's that separation of the work Gina, and then there's the Gina that's winding down as well, who's, I mean, I'm the same Gina, but when I'm working, because I love it, it's an adrenaline and I'm like super into it, but I have to have that wind down time so I don't burn out. So I think that has been such a pillar for me to really stay at the top.
Fantastic. And with that third point, is that something you've always been able to do, or was that something that you learnt to do?
Oh God, no. Something I was forced to do. I was not always like that. I could have just gone and gone and gone and not stopped and then, you know, burnt out. And I'd noticed the cycle where I'd work really hard for like two or three, like it was probably 3 days was sort of the peak point. And then by the fourth day, all I wanted to do was watch YouTube or like true crime documentaries. And I just couldn't even get myself to open an email. I was like, this is really out of balance. Like something's wrong here. And so when I started to peel back the time, that's when I became a lot more sort of balanced with it.
I'm hearing you. That really resonates with me as well. And I think for a lot of people, and I think sometimes people can take the approach of, oh, well, you're an expert. This is what you do. So you've probably just always been good at it. And it's like, sometimes we are the biggest victims to some of these behaviors because we do love what we do. And particularly health professionals, like you, your purpose is to help people and serve them. Sometimes it's easier to put them before yourself. And yeah, that resonates with me a lot. So sometimes it's the forced change, but I guess, you know, that probably also lands for a lot of people. It's understanding that there is a better way and it's not just something people wake up and know how to do. Everyone.
Yeah.
It's a habit, so guys.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, I love to ask as a last question, just to keep things a bit lighter, and we don't have to have one. I'll give you free rein on how many.
Yes.
But what are some things that you like to do for fun?
Ooh, okay. I love traveling. I've traveled to so many countries, but traveling, I love traveling. I love like board game nights with friends. I love going to the beach, hanging out with my friends and family. I'm not like a sit down at a cafe kind of person. I kind of like to be more like active in nature. But I'm also, so Mitch, my husband and I will sneak down to Time Zone every now and then, and like that'll be our date night where we're, you know, shooting dinosaurs and stuff down at Time Zone with all the other children. I find that so much fun.
Love that. That's letting your inner teenager that you were talking about before.
Yeah.
Gina, what else is coming up? I mean, obviously the book, it's everywhere, as we've said, The Habit Revolution, everyone get on it. But what else is on the horizon for you in 2024?
Oh my gosh, Jess. I mean, the book came out like a month ago now, and it has just been nonstop because it launched in Australia, New Zealand, the UK and the US. And it's also on Audible and Amazon. So really it's available globally. Now it's being translated into Chinese and Korean. So I can't see past like tomorrow. There's just so much to do with it. But, you know, the bigger pictures are I run habit courses. So I've got the Habit Change Institute where I train the trainer. So I train like dietitians, psychologists, health professionals into how to be certified habit coaches. So I'm running that. And as well, I run habit courses for everyday people who want to change their own habits. There is not another book on the horizon. I can tell you that that's not out there. But there's potential collabs with people to create a habit tracker, potentially an app. So there are things out there, but I'm going to just like do one day at a time so I don't totally fizzle out. But I think it's going to be a really exciting few years ahead.
Amazing. And not only not fizzle out, but enjoy the moment, enjoy the present. Yeah. Like, since, as you said, it's your life's work. So it's being present to enjoy it all. Well, Gina, thank you so much for joining us. I will link your details where people can find you. I know you've got a few really great free resources as well. So everyone, you'll find all of the details in the show notes. And I know there's a holiday on the horizon as well. So have a wonderful rest and reset there.
Thanks so much, Jess. Thanks for having me.
Well, team, I know you will have all loved today's conversation with Dr. Gina Cleo. As we mentioned, the best thing for you to do off the back of this is to go and purchase The Habit Revolution. You can either buy the hard copy or listen to an audiobook if you're more of a listen while you walk or get about your day. Ultimately, when we're trying to live our best life, being motivated and dedicated only gets us so far. At the end of the day, the ultimate goal should be, how do I put this habit on autopilot, which is everything that The Habit Revolution is about. If you like today's conversation, I would be so grateful if you would spread the message, share it with friends or family. And if you haven't already rated and reviewed, that would mean so very much to me. I read every single one. Otherwise, that's all for this week, and I will be back again for a new episode next Tuesday. Team, thank you for tuning in to another episode filled with actionable insights to not only help you reach the top, but to sustainably stay there. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to let people know by sharing the episode around and rating and reviewing the podcast on the platform that you listen to. Your support truly makes a difference. Until next time, keep staying at the top.